2014 board meeting. We are going to report out of closed session that we had a discussion with our labor negotiators and about current negotiations going on with our employee representative groups. I want to make a suggestion here on the order.
You have minutes first.
Minutes, I'm sorry. I jumped ahead. Thank you. So we need the approval of amendments of the September 16th.
I move approval of the minutes for September 16th, 2014.
That's today. That's right.
This one.
September 2nd.
September 2nd. Sorry.
Thank you. September 2nd. So we have a motion by Dr. Azenrath Rogers and a second by Ellen Sheffer. Mrs. Sheffer, all in favor?
Aye.
Okay.
Aye.
Is it, oh, that's you, Walter. I'm sorry. It's the voice from the ether. welcome to the meeting. So
that way.
All right. So now we're going to go to the consensus on the order of business, item 4.01. We would like to move public comment to this point in the meeting, if that's agreeable to all the members of the board.
Yeah.
I look around. Is there any disagreement with that? Okay. So we'll open to public comment, and we have a request.
We have a request from Liam Burton to speak to us. Liam, would you come forward to the microphone?
Yeah, that's it.
There you go. Just pull it down. There you go. Good job. Okay, we're ready.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen. I would like to speak about my three favorite parts on the playground. My first favorite part is the tornado. It's like you're gonna be in a hazard. My second favorite part is the spinny slide. It's like you're on a surfboard spinning. And my third is the steep slide. It's like you're gonna go too deep. Thank you for Delmar's money. Delmar walks!
And we just wanted to mention that the kids signed a poster. Liam's up here to thank the school board for Delmar's new playground, which we've absolutely loved and enjoyed. And all the kids at school signed the poster over there for you guys to show their thanks.
Thank you. I'm glad the students are enjoying their playground. I hope they play a lot. Okay, so we are at item 5.01. Is our student representatives. So we have some new student representatives. First of all, we have John Roberts from Slo High, and Eli, I didn't catch your last name, so you can go ahead and press the little button down here. Tell us your name.
My name is Eli Kukol.
Kukol.
K-U-K-O-L.
Okay.
All right, so Do we talk into this one? All right. So, hi, everybody. I'm John Roberts. I'm the ASB president of San Luis Obispo High School. Eli is the secretary treasurer. I would like to thank you guys for having us here. We love having the fancy names and everything in the seats. It just feels really official. We really like it. It's much better than the ASB meetings. It's not. Ours aren't as official. We don't get cookies, too, so there's always a plus. So I wanted to start out with some things that the ASB has been doing over the past couple weeks since school's been starting. Just going to move this over a little bit. Our first week, we had the first in a while, I don't want to say first ever, WOW week. So we had an information booth at lunch for incoming students and students just new to the school in general, saying, this is where your classes are if you need help. Here's where you go if you want to switch out of a class. And just general help for any student who really needed it but didn't want to turn to somebody they didn't know. And also in that week, we we played music every day at lunch and every day as people were coming up to school so they can, you know, get into the mood. And also during our 15-minute passing period, the break nutrition. And also at lunch, we had multiple lunchtime activities just to keep the students on campus and entertained. So we really set the bar high for the freshmen this year, so we're hoping to keep it at that level, if not higher. Also posters all around campus saying, you know, good luck to tennis, good luck to football as they're walking to the buses or to the fields and everything. And also last week during our on 9/11, we had a big poster on the second story saying, you know, we will never forget. And I just wanted to contribute to the conversation, you know, make sure that people are aware of our nation's past. And today we actually put on Club Rush. So in the quad at lunch, we had 30 different clubs on campus who had their own little tables and booths. And you could go around and they would say, this is what our club's about. Here you can sign up. You can play a game. You can learn about what we're doing. We had a youth in government. We had Harvard Model Congress. We had some off-campus clubs, such as Friday Night Live. We had the drama club, the improv club. We had a bunch going on. It was an explosion of activities, and it looked really well. But enough talk about ASB, as much as I would like to toot our horn. We have a lot going on at school lately. Our cheerleaders won first in competition at cheer camp, so against all the other cheerleaders from the other schools that were there, which was really good news to hear because we, you know, we're always focused on some of the bigger sports, and I feel that some, like cheer, aren't getting as much recognition when they're doing really well. Also, we had a lot of FFA students who did really well at the Mid-State Fair this summer, and we had Skills USA. They came in first in the nation in a couple categories. I believe it was welding and welding tech building. I may be getting that wrong, so you'll have to apologize, or I'll have to apologize. And we had some other students, more than who won nationally. We had a bunch of win at the state level, so that was really impressive. And so into the rest of sports, the football team won their first game against Oxnard on Friday, which was, you know, really exciting because we have our new head coach, Pat Johnston, and he was getting a little teary-eyed at the end, you know, gave his players a big hug, and we're all really happy to see that they're on the way to success. We have our football game versus Templeton on Friday. It's at home. We are planning to get a bunch of kids out there and rebuild the jungle. So everybody who goes is getting this T-shirt that says Slow High School, the jungle. And so everybody's out there in their gold and their black, and it's a big student section. It's always getting excited and standing up and cheering, and it really helps out the players. They really like it a lot. And on to other sports, we have girls golf, who's been playing. They've been doing pretty well. We had tennis play against Rio Grande High School today. I don't know how they did, but being rivals, I hope they did well. And water polo came in first in their first tournament of the year, and they all got their gold medals. So of course we saw a lot of pictures of, you know, guys in their Speedos biting their gold medals, the whole Michael Phelps thing. It was everybody was really excited. And we are beginning the school site council meeting soon, and that will be another ASB affair. We have certain delegates, I believe one from the freshman class, one from the sophomore class, one from the junior class, and one from the senior class, that will all get together and help work on things going on at school. So unless you have anything else to say?
Actually, there's one thing. We did have a successful program where we sent a Reuters bus down to a game in, I believe, Santa Ynez. And that was where we had people sign up permission slips on during WOW Week. And they all went down there on the bus and cheered on our team. So we had a good visitors section, was cheering out loud for our Tigers. We were real proud of how that worked, and we plan to do it more in the future.
Yeah, I believe next week we have one for the Morro Bay game. So we assume we're going to get a lot more people for that because it's closer, not an hour and a half drive. So that'll be really fun. Also, before I forget, during our ASB retreat, we wrote letters to each of the incoming freshmen and mailed them out saying, you know, we're really happy to have you here. The ASB just wants to let you know that anytime that you see any of us or you have any questions, just contact us. And we gave information on the info booth, and that if they brought their card with them, depending on what number they were going to get a certain spirit wear prize. So the first person who came got a sweatshirt, and some people got drawstring bags, some people got bandanas. So we're trying to rebuild this community of intense spirit, and it starts with this class. So we're really excited, and I think that's all we have. Thank you.
Thank you, Jono and Eli. Any questions from the board? We welcome you here. We look forward to seeing you very often. And
other comprehensive high school.
Well, we're happy to start a tradition if it's something as good as this.
Excellent. Thank you.
Just a comment. Can you repeat the number of clubs you have on campus?
Well, the number of clubs we have on campus grows over the year, but the clubs that showed up today and claimed their booths was around 30, maybe a little more.
And all of those have a faculty advisor, is that,
yeah,
that's correct?
Yeah, and they have their constitution written out and their meeting minutes and officers and everything. So
great.
Make
all
sure,
right,
it's official.
Thank you, John. Well done. All right, we will now move on to the... Oh, yes. You are welcome to stay for the entire meeting if you'd like, but you are also equally free to go. We assume that you have lots to do.
I have an AP government test tomorrow.
Okay.
So
then we'll be seeing you, Jono. You have a good test and be well prepared.
Thank you. I will put my studying to its fullest extent.
Great. Thank you.
Best excuse ever.
That's what I should tell my teacher. I was living government.
Yeah, that's
excellent.
All right, thank you. And now we are at 5.02, which is the Personnel Commission Annual Report. And
well, hello. As you may know, there are two entities, educational agencies in San Luis Obispo County that have merit systems that are governed by a personnel commission, and that is the County Office of Education in our own district, San Luis Coastal. And so tonight we have our annual report from 2013-14, and we are lucky to have Becky French, one of our three personnel commissioners, here to report to you.
Thank you, Mrs. Newland.
Thank you. Good evening. All right, well, my name is Becky French, and I am one of the three commissioners, and I'm here to present our annual report. Just a little refresher, the commission is an independent body responsible for overseeing the merit system, which covers classified school employees. The fundamental purpose of the merit system is to ensure that the selection, promotion, and retention of employees is based upon merit and fitness. So as you know, the Personnel Commission we have three members. Kent Taylor is the member that's selected by the board. Gail Sears has been the member that's selected by CSEA. And the two commissioners then appoint a third one, and that is the role that I currently serve. We meet monthly, and we work on issues related to job descriptions, reclassifications, hiring, transfers, employee appeals, and a whole bunch of other things that you can see in our annual report. And this past year, Kristen Newland joined San Luis Coastal as a personnel director, and the commissioners have really enjoyed working with her and appreciate her knowledge. She has an extensive knowledge in human resources, and then also coming from the county office, that knowledge in the merit system rules as well. So that's been really, really beneficial. So thank you. Majority of the activities are outlined in the annual report. I did want to mention a few items. This past year, the commission continues to look at our merit system rules. You may remember that was on our report last year. We continue to work on it because it is an extensive process. And Jean Keller has been just phenomenal in the research that she does on that, because you have to look at education code, you have to look at the union contracts, and then you also need to look at folks that are not covered by those contracts, which would be classified managers, confidential employees. So a lot of intricacies that you've got to look at, and they do a great job of bringing all that to us, and then we weed through it, and it's a long process. Let's see. The other thing I wanted to highlight or mention was that we conducted our first, it was the first hearing for us, on an appeal of a classified employee from a disciplinary action. The three of us had had really minimal experience doing these, so we were fortunate enough. Kristen had Mr. Jerry Glenn come in. Mr. Glenn is a commissioner for the county office, and he also has a strong background in human resources and has conducted a lot of hearings. And so he kind of did the procedural part of the hearing so that we could really focus on the task at hand. And I think it was a good experience, and hopefully we don't have to do many of those, but I think it went off as well as it could have. The other item I just wanted to mention is that this year we actually had a number of employees come and participate in our meetings, which we really hadn't have, at least since I've been on there.
Thank you very much, Rebecca. Okay. French. That was wonderful. Thank you.
Thank you.
Oh.
Wave.
Oh. Okay. All right. Great. So we are now at correspondence. I don't see any on my we do have one up. Here we go. Oh,
It's just a routine letter from the County Office of Education indicating their review and approval of the bargaining agreement with SEIU under the AB 1200 requirements.
Thank you, Mrs. Holmes. All right, and is there any correspondence that the board members received they wish to share? Okay, seeing none. Okay, we are now on public comment, but I'll open up real quickly. Is there any other additional public comment? All right, at this time. Okay, so we are now at the business and budget update. Mr. Pinkerton.
Yeah, just a few things to update the board on. We actually started our emergency plan reviews with all of the school sites today, and so our goal is for Chris Dowler, Deputy Director of Student Support Services, myself, Anthony Plazo, and Steve Stewart from the facilities crew, is to go out to each site, meet with each principal, review their emergency plans, their site maps, and to actually walk the campus to see where the emergency shutoffs for water and gas and electricity are. So it was really good. We started today. We hit the Coast Schools, Monarch Grove, Baywood, Los Osos Middle School, and it's a good thing for us to go out and do that and make sure that in the event of an emergency, our staff is ready to, you know, it's going to take us time to get there. So if they can turn off the gas, turn off the water, those types of things are very important, of course. And so it was good today to start that, and we'll be going to every single school and talking about that, as well as the fact that we have some new principals. And so it's good for them to pull the binder out, go through it with us, talk about staff and all of the processes. So I was really, really excited about today, just our first day going out.
Mr. Buckman.
Thanks. So, Ryan, this would be a review with staff of the school site plan that the school site council writes each year.
So last year we redid our entire safety plan for the district, from lockdowns, drills, for each site. And so, yeah, they take those. They're approved by the school site council. They come, you know, they go through the process. And so this is specifically what we wanted to do, was just the site maps and where those shutoffs were. So that was kind of our key today, was to make sure that custodian, principal, assistant principals, people know where those are just in the event of an emergency. So it was good. It was really good to get out. A couple of other things. I met with Todd Cooper and Steve Davis from the YSA, the Youth Sports Association. So we have an agreement with them in terms of using our fields use, and they donate back to the district. And so the agreement that we currently have is really kind of old, and out of place, and so I met with them to look at putting something new together that reflects kind of current practice and donation levels and those things. So it was a great meeting, and it's amazing. The board would be amazed at how much our community uses our facilities. I mean, specifically our fields, and both. We have agreements with the city of Morro Bay and then groups also in Los Osos, too, for our co-schools as well. But it was a great meeting to meet with Todd and to just kind of touch base with him and begin the dialogue of redoing that agreement.
So, Mr. Pinkerton, is this sort of an umbrella group for soccer, baseball, softball?
All of those groups.
Okay.
All of those groups. So, again, we have our main agreement with the cities. So Morro Bay, San Luis Obispo, in terms of our facility use and at our school sites. But on top of that, our next user group is the YSA group. And so instead of having soccer call facilities and look for fields and baseball and softball and all these other groups, they've kind of combined forces to develop this YSA group that actually helps with facilitating that process of field use, basically, throughout the city fields as well as the district fields.
But they represent solely the San Luis.
For the most part, San Luis Obispo.
Greater San Luis.
Yes.
The city area. So,
but we have other groups that definitely use our co-schools as well. ASO and softball and baseball. And we run a lot of those through the city of Morro Bay.
Okay.
Through their Parks and Rec program.
Thank you.
So it was a good meeting. It was just kind of, again, one of those things where it was time to update it. It's kind of old in terms of how it was set up, and there are a few years where they had down years, and then they pitched back in, and it's just time to look at that again. I'll be working with them. I also met with the city of Morro Bay, with Joe Woods, who's the person in charge of their Parks and Rec program for the city of Morro Bay, and just talked about the potential pool use.
And this is a student data and assessment system. It used to be Data Director, and we've replaced that with a new software system called Illuminate. And this new system we're really excited about. This is really going to allow teachers greater access to student data and assessment results. So some of the highlights to think about when you hear Illuminate is that Illuminate supports the use of formative classroom assessments by providing results in real time through a system called GradeCam, which is basically a camera that teachers can use when they have student results and they slide the results right under their camera. It will capture the assessment information immediately and give that feedback to teachers up on a screen. And the teachers can either be projecting that if they are not having student information and they want everyone to see how progress is going, or they can have it for themselves so that they can then regroup and reorganize the information in order to meet students' needs right in real time. So really neat component of Illuminate. Also, the new elementary standards-based report cards will be easily created by teachers within Illuminate. And an item bank of Common Core aligned assessment questions is also available for teachers and for ISLA as well to develop Common Core related benchmarks or other common assessments within the classroom. So that item bank is another great advantage. There's been a lot of training revolving around this, and there'll continue to be more, but teachers received logins during their professional development sessions before school started, and many have already begun to access that data. Training opportunities began before school started, and they'll continue going throughout the year. During the secondary professional development day, teachers were able to select a session and attend a session based on Illuminate. Elementary teachers from several sites will participate in Illuminate training sessions during TCT time during September and October. And every Tuesday in September, all district personnel have the opportunity to also attend some drop-in classes at the district office to learn more about Illuminate. And in October, our data coaches are planning to drop into training at school sites all over the district in order to help in that training. So as we delve deeper into implementing Common Core standards in our classroom this year, Illuminate, we feel like, really will be a great support at all three levels is the way we think of it. It's a great system for a district level using data and assessment, also for a site level to be able to look at their data quickly and easily, and then a big advantage Illuminate brings to the table is at the teacher level in a classroom. So we're excited about this switch. And Amy or Erin are here if you have any questions.
I just have a question about illuminant or illuminate?
Illuminate.
Illuminate, I love that. So the idea is kind of that, so if the teacher has a student who has come up with a creative solution, they're working at their desk, they can use this to take a picture, project to the entire classroom, to share the methodology, is that the
idea? It's a little different. So it would be more if a teacher has created either a multiple choice type of question and response, or a rubric where it could be scanned. Almost think of like what a Scantron used to be to us, but it'll just right there in the moment do it, and then give the teacher that information, and then the teacher then can group students based on that information in real time. So it's not as elaborate as like a creative, big problem-based solution. It's more along the lines of a multiple choice or a rubric type of response.
I see. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Well, this sounds great. I'm interested. At some point, I'm going to have to give you a call and find out. I'd love to see what it looks like because I am assuming that most of the teachers will be conversant with this within a few weeks, or most are conversant right now.
It's started, so the training has started, so everyone's kind of at a different level of comfort with it, but you can... It has a lot of really neat features where you can kind of customize your dashboard, is what it calls it, your initial screen that you see. So people are kind of at different levels of comfort and levels of assessment with it. But I've seen a lot of teachers hungry for the grade cam and really wanting to make progress with it. And then, of course, the elementary report card will have people diving in and using it quickly.
I just want to share from our before school professional development on the new report card. There was literally, I think Rick was in the room for it, a cheer when we showed the Illuminate and how easy it will now be to punch those grades in, make it happen, you know, get those report cards out a lot quicker than in past years.
Great, thank you. Are there any other questions from the board? Thank you very much. Okay, we are at item 8.01, and this is a public hearing on the 2013-2014 reopener agreement with the Service Employees International Union, SEIU. Is there any public comment at this time?
To go over its GAN limit, we would have to do a board resolution to increase our GAN limit and notify the State Department of Finance so they know how much their GAN limit is. And where you find our information on our GAN limit is on page 3 of that SACS form. And you can see on there that our adjusted appropriations limit is $72,374,124. And our appropriations that are subject to the limit are $63,302,845, so we're about $9 million under our limit. Any questions?
Thank you for the very clear explanation and the information on that. I think I have a kind of an idea of how this works, but thank you very much. We do have a question. Marilyn?
Well, I don't have a question. I just... I didn't read the 115 pages of the SACS conversion sheet. I'm sorry.
Oh.
I'm sure it was really thrilling.
I worked so hard on that for you.
You work so hard on it every year. But I did read the attached information, and based on that, I'll move approval of Resolution 021415.
And because of my love of seconding resolutions that really have no effect in reality, I would second.
And it's even more unreal with this voice from beyond.
Yeah.
Okay, we have a
Thank
motion
you.
For the resolution 021415 by Mrs. Roger and a second by Mr. Millar. Is there any further discussion? All in favor?
It's roll.
Aye.
Oh, that's right. It has to be...
Sorry.
A roll call vote.
Mrs. Roger?
Yes.
Mr. Millar?
Aye.
Mr. Questenberry?
Yes.
Mrs. Sheffer? Dr. Eisendrath Rogers? Mr. Buckman? Passes 6-0.
Thank you. Someday I'm going to go through a meeting with fewer than about five or six errors. Okay, so we also have a resolution on, no, that's GAN limit. We're at 10.01, the approval, that's why you're still here, Julie. I see, okay. Approval of the unaudited year-end actual financial statement for 2013-14.
Yes, we have closed the books on 13-14. And we will quickly go through the differences in our budgeted second interim amounts and how we ended the year and some explanations about that. I'm going to go through briefly the revenues and the expenditures and our ending balances information, and then I think Brian's going to go over the general fund summary after that. So, okay. Can you scroll down just a little bit? You can see that our revenues went up by about $1 million. And we know that the local revenues always continue going up throughout the year, but some of our other revenues went up as well. Our property taxes came in about $447,000 more than we had budgeted at second interim. We get this information from the assessor's office and from our county office, and they update it three times a year. So at second interim, we update it from what they tell us. And sometimes it goes up higher than they actually tell us, or sometimes it's a little bit less. It usually isn't less, though. And our federal revenues appear to have gone down, but federal revenues are...
Go ahead.
Okay, so it looks like our federal revenues went down by about $348,000. Federal revenues are considered an unearned revenue. So they give us revenues before we've actually earned it. So if we receive revenues and we don't spend those revenues in a certain fiscal year, those revenues are considered unearned in that year, and then they're transferred over to the next year. So we didn't really go down in revenues. Those revenues will appear in 14-15 as carryover. State revenues went up also, and I think that was because our lottery revenues went up, and we also got, I have to remember now, the energy grant came in. And then local revenues, as I said, they always go out up throughout the year because of donations and fees that we don't budget until we receive. And we also had that bus grant that came in. And then on the expense side, you can see that our salaries were a little bit higher. Our budget at second interim was a little higher than we spent, which is normal. Our benefits was a little bit out of line, and we're going to have to keep an eye on that in this next year. Overall, our salary and benefits were about 83% of our revenues at the end of the year. I also wanted to talk briefly about the other funds. There's a chart in here that has all of the other funds, their beginning balance, what we received as revenues, what we spent, and what we ended the year with. You can see that our total ending balance for all the funds went up by about $1.1 million. And our deferred revenues and our building fund ending balances, we transferred into Fund 40. We consolidated those into Fund 40 so we would have one fund to do our capital outlay. Fund 14 was going to require a commitment by the board. It has to be a commitment of ongoing revenue into that fund, and we didn't want to keep committing to that, and it just made more sense to have all of our capital outlay in one fund. And the Fund 21 we're going to need, if we do pass the bond, we need that for the bond proceeds, and we didn't want to intermingle those funds. And I think Ryan is going to talk about the general fund summary now.
Yes. So some key things in the funds outside, you know, we did see increases in developer fees for one. So over the course of the year, and again, developer fees are those fees that we receive that can only be used on facility projects that are tied to growth in our district. So they cannot be used for our two comprehensive high schools or things like that. It has to solely be focused on growth in the district. So that was one key one. The other was an increase in the funds that were put in for our Wi-Fi project as well. So you're going to see a little bit of growth in those as well. So when you look at the bottom line for us, I think the district, the board's made some good decisions in terms of getting us to a point where we have balanced our budget. over the last few years when we've had, you know, 2 years of negative property tax in terms of negative increases for us, so less funds that have come in with revenues. So we've been able to balance those and come to a pretty healthy place. So again, when we look at the main issue for me, it's always kind of looking at the net increase, decrease for the district. And so for our 13-14 actuals, it came in at $900,000. So our expenditures were less than our revenues, which again is a healthy place for us to be as a district. It's much different than the place we've been for the past 4 years. So we've kind of come to a point now where hopefully we're turning the page and able to to hopefully make some decisions, and I'll be at the next item talking to the board about a further budget projection as well. At the bottom there, you'll see we have our ending balance, which then comes out higher than our beginning balance, and then basically the rest of the ending balance is broken out into those categories of items that are kind of, this becomes a one-time expenditure, right? So those are kind of our savings account funds that are left after our yearly budget goes through. So, you know, when the board makes decisions, they have to look at that annual revenues expense and make decisions in terms of either increases, decreases, and where that goes. And then we have allocated some of the ending balance funds, so to some of those items that we left off of the budget in June, because at that point we didn't know for sure what we were going to end, so we held them off. And so those are included in this ending funds, which includes the CSEA bonus pay, the SEIU bonus, the furniture and equipment fund, the increase that we just had for our STIRS, for our certificated employees, that went up based on the governor's new law, the vans for the high school, elementary music funds, bringing our maintenance budget to 3%, computer repair, replacing vehicles, LLI tutors, and such. And so you'll kind of see that down. We still have the board's 10% reserve for economic uncertainties, which the board has set as their key for us because of the volatile potential nature of our revenue force, you know, sources, basically. So that's kind of a breakdown of unaudited actuals for the board in terms of, and we'll open it up to any questions that you might have.
Mr. Buckman.
Thanks. I want to thank Brian for a little bit of time today. I, from the Friday memo, clicked on unaudited actuals, which took me to 115-page document, which I got through about, 35 pages. But one of the things that I do as I look at these things is look at that far column, and it shows the minus percent or increase percent mm-hmm. to that budget. And I just got stopped at one point because as I'm going down this column as quickly as I can, there was an item, and I can't remember what it was, that was a 1,670.
Department is very good. I have a couple questions about, and in light of, you know, just being clear about how we as a district are able to spend money that we have now as opposed to, you know, when Measure D passes. But under the column on summary of all funds, we have things such as a building fund and capital facilities fund and special reserve for capital outlay projects. Could you, and I know it doesn't even begin to add up to anything close to what we need to do with our comprehensive high schools and the work on our other schools mm-hmm. in our district, but I just want to make sure nobody's feeling like, hey, we already have this money, or could you explain a little bit about how some of these funds are
sure.
restricted or...
Yeah, so definitely some of the funds are restricted. So the adult education fund, your cafeteria fund in particular, can only be spent on food service. So whether it be equipment, supplies, food service workers, those types of things, so very restricted. The board does have a post-employment, so Fund 20, which is set up for employees for retiree benefits, and so that's something that is set aside for that specific purpose. And so what we've done with Julie is actually we had some kind of small funds, building fund, Fund 21. We had our Fund 30 County Schools Facility Fund, which was $1,000, right? So some small ones, and trying to put them all into kind of one place, which will be Fund 40 moving forward. And so as you can see in Fund 40, it's $1 million. So we have $1 million in that fund right now that's set aside for facilities projects. So such as the playground that we just put in here at Del Mar Elementary School, right? So there are small things that we do. We also have a deferred maintenance budget inside our general fund as well. So we do put money towards deferred maintenance, routine repair, those types of things. So it's, but realize on the scope of that, that's $1 million a year maybe that we put aside. So it measured D asking for $177 million to redo the campus. I mean, our little fixes and fixing things throughout the way, you know, maybe $1 million a year. So it would take us 177 years to get those types of funds, right, to be able to do major renovations like that. So that's why in California, the way that school districts are able to basically make major upgrades is through bond measures. That's the system that's been established. So, you know, for us, just a reminder that, you know, we are a people business. So most of our expenditures go to our teachers, our classified staff, our principals, our secretaries, all, you know, everybody. So 85% of our expenditures go towards people. And so that taking that extra 15%, it goes quick. Utilities, you know, all the materials and supplies, buses, you know, everything else that goes into that other 15% fund goes pretty quick. And so having funds available to do major renovations is tough. Now, we do have some money in our developer fees, so there is funds that are there, but again, those cannot be used on sites that don't have a nexus to growth. So we were able to utilize some of those funds with renovating the portion of Teach Elementary School recently, because they moved due to the growth of Bishop's Peak and the students at that school. So we were able to make that nexus for those funds. But we can't utilize those, unfortunately, in any other way other than growth projects. So that's, it's, you know, we're restricted in that way for those potential funds.
Thank you very much.
Sure.
Mrs. Roger has a question about the developer fees and where that shows up here.
Yeah.
Well, I do, but my first question is, if I'm understanding correctly, then Fund 21 and Fund 25 will cease to exist?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
They will be incorporated into Fund 40?
Fund 40, yes.
Okay. I was trying to look up the developer fees, Mr. Pinkerton, and I...
Fund 25.
Fund...
Capital Facilities Fund.
Okay. Since those are restricted dollars, how can they be incorporated into Fund 40?
It's Fund 14, developer fees, and Fund 21. Those balances were moved into Fund 40.
Okay, so Fund 14 is a deferred maintenance fund, according to this?
Yes. Okay. So that and Fund 21.
That and Fund 21
are being moved into Fund 40.
Into 40.
So
and
with
25 will continue then to stand alone.
25 is our developer fees, yes.
That represents developer fees.
Yes. So part of the LCFF, see, we used to get a matching fund for deferred maintenance. District puts in some, we receive some from the state. That's no longer. So with LCFF, the new local control funding formula, deferred maintenance is now part of the base grant that school districts get. So there is no more deferred maintenance like we've known in the past. So that's why that is actually being, you know, Fund 40 for those reserves that we have, and then it will be put, basically deferred maintenance, routine repair maintenance now, will be put into our general fund, total salaries and classified certificate. Well, we have hourly teachers, we have substitutes, we have people that are under those budget categories in terms of expenditures that don't receive health benefits. So we need to make sure that we take those health benefits expenditures out of our budget, probably second interim, first interim, as we get that information and make sure that is just too big of a spread, I would say, that we would want to see. We would want that to be a lot more narrower than what it shows now.
So those particular employees are distorting budget figures to some extent?
For expenditures, yes.
Okay. And it's not related to the state's decision to transfer the responsibility for certain benefit. It's to the school district itself that was referred to earlier in the meeting?
Yes, not yet.
Not yet.
Okay. We'll talk about that in the 7-year budget.
That answers the question.
Yeah.
Yes. Are there any other questions from the board? And is there any public comment on this issue? Seeing none. This requires approval by the board. This is the unaudited actuals for 13-14, correct? So
I'll move approval of the unaudited actuals for the years 2013-2014.
And a second by Mr. Buckman. Yes, so we have a motion by Mrs. Sheffer and a second by Mr. Buckman. Any further discussion? All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Okay. Motion passes 6-0. Thank you, Mr. Pinkerton. And now we are on approval of the budget process and planning timeline 2014-2015 with a 7-year outlook.
Yeah, projection. So, you know, part of the, and I'll go back to the unaudited actuals for a minute. The board knows that when we did our budget discussions for 14-15 back in May and June, I did let the board know that based on our projections at that point, that we looked like we had a balanced budget, right? I mean, even though if you looked at the Sacramento report and it looked bad, we were overspending. I mean, based on the budget knowledge, talking with Julie, going through with staff, we knew that we were towards a balanced budget, basically, and so which was good. And so part of that process is for us to, I think, to be as transparent as possible with our whole budget process. So, and one of the things that, as a basic aid school district, and the reason why we can kind of put this projection together, to be honest with you, is the fact that we're not going to receive any state money through LCFF, through the new local control funding formula. So basically, we're kind of set now in the amount of state aid, the amount of federal aid, those types of things, for us to even be able to put something like this together. Now, again, I will tell you, this is a projection. It could change at any moment, any time, right, in terms of outgoing years. We have tried to, and working with Julie, and I thank Julie a lot for putting this together for us, we've tried to be as reliable as possible with the information that we currently know, not being too conservative. So you'll see that for this year, in this 7-year projection, we have put in a 5% property tax increase. Okay, even though we were told it was going to be 1.5 in the spring by the county, and recent knowledge, it looks like it's going to be closer to 5. We should know for sure through the tax assessor's office this month what that should look like for sure and be able to put that in. But again, trying to be, what I'm going to do is I'm going to kind of go through this document with you tonight, kind of explain it, and again, open it up for questions, those types of things. But as I go through, I'll try to explain how we've tried to not be overly conservative, yet not, you know, put the whole facts out as much as and as best as we can. Because I think for the board, it seems like we're always in February crushed with the decision of what to do. Where are we? What's the budget going to be like? What are we going to do? So if we can take a better long-term look maybe at our budget so that we can begin to prioritize and make decisions that will benefit us on a long term. Again, trying to be as transparent as possible with our union groups, with our parents, with our community, throughout the way, I think hopefully we'll build some trust and we'll be able to move forward. And so that's kind of my purpose of putting this together and sharing it with the board and what we'll see tonight. In terms of the budget process itself, my goal would be that Mr. Robinette and myself, again, do our kind of our site visits. It was really important for us to go out to all of our school sites and talk to our staffs and go over budget information and share where we are and talk about programs and really get their opinions and their advice about what we're doing now and what we need to do in the future. So that was really pivotal. One of the key impetus for us doing this is because of basically one of the new rules that came through our recent budget that came from the governor, and mainly the increase in both STRS and PERS over the next 7 years. So we're going to see an increase of certificated from, I think it's 8.3%. It was jumped to 8.88% this year and will rise all the way up to 19.1% in the out year of 2021, as well as our PERS. Again, it's kind of the same. I think it's around 10% now, and it jumps up to 20% in 2021. So that is, and so that's a mandate that the board basically, that as a district, we have to pay that portion, extra portion of the STRS and PERS liability for our employees. So that is a dramatic increase over the next 7 years that we're going to have to budget for and plan for and have in place. And so just people in general are going to be much more expensive in 2021 based on those liabilities. And so that's something that districts have to account for. And for us as we move forward, I think as a district, for us to consider as we go through this process. Okay? So I'm going to quickly walk you through this budget projection. So if you can tear your three pages apart, I'll have you do that, because we're going to start with revenues, which is the second page. And what we've done on the last page is actually, Julie's done a nice job of putting assumptions by each one of those items. So why and how we got to where we were. So for example, our state aid, we are locked in at our 12-13 state revenue. For it, that used to be our categorical funds that we received. So when they passed the LCFF legislation, as a district, we were locked into our 12-13 amount that we had received, that deficited amount, which was about $8 million less than we had received in the past, I believe. There, and again, this is one of those items, and I'll warn the board that as we go through this, again, this is a projection. So like the very first thing we're going to talk about right now is something that's being debated in the state right now. Department of Finance thinks that community-funded districts continue to receive those funds. Department of Education is looking at that legislation, and their interpretation is that when LCFF is fully funded, that community-funded districts no longer receive that 12-13 amount. So for us, I went ahead and included it in the budget because, again, I'm not trying to be super conservative in our outlook, but those are the types of things that can happen, things that we need to consider and just keep in the back of our mind and really watch legislation and work with our legislators as we move forward. So that's that categorical fund state aid that we receive. EPA, that's Prop 30. Those are the funds that we receive currently from the state through Prop 30. Those funds end in the 18-19 school year. So that's why you'll see at the very end, bottom line, why it drops significantly in 1920 and 2021 is because that is when the Prop 30 ends. Our property taxes, that's the main source that we receive in terms of our revenues. So again, we put in all of our unaudited actuals, true amounts, because we have them now. And we've also included that 5%, I went ahead and put in the 5% for this year. Again, trying to just be realistic and open and transparent about what those amounts are going to be. We do have some transfer amounts that last year there was some that went to deferred maintenance. That's basically the cost of our adult education program is the next line. We have our transfer to Bellevue Santa Fe. So Bellevue Santa Fe is our charter school in our district, and so they are now an independent charter, and they receive funds based on their LCFF amount, which does increase through 2020-21. You'll see that reflected as a negative. And we also have our special ed property tax transfer. So we do receive property taxes towards our special education fund. And so what Julie's done is tried to take an average over the past 3 to 5 years and went ahead and put that ongoing through 2021 again. So these are the types of things we had to just kind of use averages to try to be as realistic as possible. So you get those local revenue amounts. Then we go to federal revenue. Again, we're expecting MA funds. Just got something out this week about the fact that it looks like they are going to begin reimbursing MA funds this year, which is fantastic for us because, again, this is something we've went ahead and budgeted, though we received no funds last year. But we're going to go ahead, again, to be realistic, to be transparent, put those in because we should be receiving those funds. So we do receive some federal special education funds, Title I, Title II, Title III. We've kind of seen those, you know, see them remaining stable. Our Perkins amount as well. We do see our homeless education grant ends after the 14-15 school year. And then our Medi-Cal billing, again, try to take an average of the past 5 years and extrapolate that out. That gives you the federal amount. We have our state then. We did apply for our planning funds and receive those. And so right now we are moving forward with our energy upgrades. And specifically, the two projects we're focused on now are the lights in the high school gyms at both Slo High and Morro Bay High School with those funds. So that goes all the way through 17-18. And again, the Common Core funds that you see at the bottom, the other state was the class size reduction school safety funds that we received this year, and the Common Core funds that were given to us, again, make those revenues look a little bit higher for 13-14, but normalizes throughout the rest of the years. And then again, our local funds, we do, we're fortunate in that we do receive lease rental income for the district. I believe the hope is that, well, it's good and bad, right, if interest rates go up. So the hope would be that our money would earn a little more interest in the bank. So you'll see Julie has put in a little bit of a bump from $30,000 to $50,000 in terms of interest income. You know, again, trying to be realistic, and hopefully, you know, that's kind of where we think it's going to be. Transportation fees, pretty stable. Fees and contracts, donations. Again, donations is one of those areas that we don't like to budget because you don't know how much you're going to get. But if we're going to do a projection, we want to, again, be realistic. What has the average been? Let's go ahead and put that in so we can see what it's like. So tuition in our school, so basically that's some of our foreign exchange students that come and come to our district and pay tuition. Then we have our special education transfer from County of Education, and so we do receive funds from other districts because we do educate their students here in our. So some of our smaller districts around the county, they don't have those programs, so we educate their students and then they pay us for them. And then last one is our CCSFA, which is our agreement through LucMR, where we receive some property tax gains, and LucMR does as well. And then lastly, our transfer in from Fund 20, our post-employment, that outside fund, Fund 20, that we talked about earlier. We took some funds out of that and put that in the budget. And then, again, you'll see our total revenues across the board. From 15-16 to 2021, we have just put in a 2% increase in property tax revenue. So, again, two of the last 3 years, we've had negative property tax increases. Last year was a little over 2. This year it's 5. So we'll see, you know, but so try to be not too conservative, but trying to be as realistic as possible with that. So that is reflected out from 15-16 all the way through 2021 is that 2%. So then if we go to expenditures, again, made some basic assumptions about retirements, you know, for both certificate and classified, 10 a year, put in step and column, and kind of tried to extrapolate that out over the course. This includes no increases in pay over time, you know, nothing like that in particular, right, at this point. So through negotiations, those things can change and would have to be put in at those times. Classified, again, the same thing. So, again, try to take averages of costs and what we paid in the past. And then really the dramatic one that I'll point out is kind of what I addressed and why this budget projection is so critical for districts is look at what happens with benefits. So we go from the district expending $14 million in 13-14 to close to $23 million in 2021 based on that gradual increase in both the STRS and PERS rates along with increases in benefits, health benefits. So that is something as well. The district has a sliding scale, pay the first $5,000 and then 25%, you know, split it basically the rest. And so as those costs go up, not only is that an increased cost to our employees, but it's also an increased cost to the district as well. So it pretty dramatic, I mean, in terms of that benefit section. And so when I talk about the cost of people going up, that's one of those areas that I think it's just really critical for us to work with our union groups, to work with our teachers, to work with the board, to prioritize and plan and do what we can to mitigate some of those increases whenever possible. So again, the STRS goes up, and I talked about the increase from, again, we went up about 0.5% this year, and it's going to go up to 19.1. For PERS, it goes up to the 20%. The rest, FICA stays about the same. As you can see, a little slight increase along with salaries. So Medicare, alternative retirement system, health and welfare. That's basically the benefits, the health benefits. The costs, our unemployment insurance is relatively low based on the new way that they compute that. So workers' compensation, though it was low in 13-14, again, Julie kind of did some averages. Overall, even though we had a good year in workers' compensation, we are seeing the overall cost of that go up anyways. So just because of costs with Medicare, with medical care and those types of things, but maintaining that is critical for us. You see our retiree benefits cost there. And then lastly, those types of things. So my hope would be that that would be something we would work on along with our Prop 39 funds. Other outgo that you'll see, so basically we actually have some of our students that are educated by the County Office of Education. The transfer out of some money to LUCMR for the CCSFA, because we get that in our revenues portion, so we both districts benefit by that agreement. We have some indirect costs that we pay, and then we actually, when possible, we try to fund Fund 20 at the same rate that we take out. So to keep that post-employment benefit fund available for our employees for the future. So it's critical that we maintain that Fund 20 whenever, as much as we can whenever possible. I believe we were, you know, based on our numbers, we're at 9.9 million, and our actuarial was, we were supposed to be at 14 million. So we do that every fall. We do an actuarial of where we're supposed to be with our Fund 20. And again, that's for our post-retirement benefits. So as you go down, again, the total expense in and out, what you see is that basically we have a balanced budget based on this until about 18-19, where it begins to become an issue because of those increases in both STIRS and PERS on those out years, as well as the ending of the EPA funds or Prop 30 funds, which stops in 18-19. So that's why that kind of dramatic drop in 19-20, 20-21. And so, again, this is a projection. This is not, you can't hold me to it for the next 7 years, right? But it helps the board kind of have a vision of the future in looking forward with the budget and helping us with planning and making decisions about priorities and programs, and working with our unions and our staffs. So it's an important piece of, I think, our overall budget process. So questions?
Dr. Eisendrath Rogers.
I just like to make a comment about a choice of words that you use. And you call this a conservative budget because you put in our actual expected expenditures. But I think I would call that a realistic budget.
Yes.
Yes. So as I'm looking at this budget realistically, what I'm seeing is that for the next 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 years, we are in the black. And then for the following 3 years after that, we are bright red. So that's important for us,
yes,
to take note of how that is a realistic view of the future. Just a comment.
Thank you.
Mr. Buckman.
One of the things that I'm hearing and I'm excited about is there's going to be, I don't know if you're going to do it by doing litmus tests during the year, but there's going to be a little more monitoring of what falls down and maybe what gets that we spend more on education and
it's that balance.
Watch it more closely.
It's the balance, right? In terms of, you know, the easiest way for me to go is to be super conservative with revenues and overestimate expenditures, right? I mean, that it makes my job really easy. So, but that said, it's a process, and so you don't want to be too, you know, opposite the other way, where all of a sudden I'm coming back to you and I'm saying, hey, we're in the hole $3 million. What do we do now? So we definitely want to monitor this. I think that's why the first interim is important. That's why second interim is important. That's why, you know, coming back to you when we do the budget and being realistic about where we stand as a district and what the real numbers look like and working with our staff is definitely important for the board to know.
And so besides coming to us with, oh, my God, we have to cut, it also sounds like we're going to have a better handle, and so that when we get to the end of the year, that number at the bottom will be less.
Hopefully.
We'll have looked at it more carefully.
Hopefully.
Mr. Millar, are you still out there? Do you have a question? You may have left the room or the airways. Okay. Is there any public comment on this? Okay. All right.
Jim?
Okay, Mr. Millar, yes.
I had my mute button in the wrong position. First, I'd like to join with Catherine in her remarks that I do think that Ryan's being too conservative in his rhetoric, that this is a realistic approach.
Very.
And I have to say, I think it is such an improvement and a far more intelligent way to budget multi-year. I want to commend Dr. Prater and his leadership on this, and Ryan and Julie and their implementation. And I'm looking forward to...
On the update of the AP student data... And Mrs. McGrath, will you introduce everyone?
My pleasure. Everyone tonight is me and Erin Kunkel, who's done a great job of preparing this for you. So tonight we're going to talk about advanced placement data. And this data, as you know, less formally referred to as AP data, is our high school data from just our two comprehensive high schools. And this looks at timely information, that looks at cumulative data, as well as the data that we have from last year. And as we've discussed earlier, instead of doing three large student achievement reports, instead this year we're trying to break down the information that we give to you based on your board priorities and goals. So this does match your board priority and goal of giving access to a larger range of students to AP courses, and gives a real high expectation for our students and a level of rigor. So Erin will take you through the specifics and let us know if you have any questions.
Good evening. I'm not quite as tall as she is. There we go. So I'm going to start with Morro Bay High School. And so you received this larger legal sheet, and Morro Bay is on one of the sides. Morro Bay currently offers 12 different AP courses, including art history, which was added this year, calculus A, B, and BC, as well as statistics, English language, which is the 11th grade course, and then English literature, which is the 12th grade course, European history, U.S. history, U.S. government, microecon, and physics and Spanish, kind of our basic courses. The next thing I wanted to point out is the next table on your sheet, which is the enrollment in AP courses by grade and student group. So there are many courses that are more grade specific. So our grade 10 students, for the most part, participate in the European history course. 11th and 12th grade students participate in the gamut of all of these courses, except for the English courses, which are more grade specific. And also, what we really wanted to focus on here was looking at the data by student group. So we've used our groups that LCAP has recommended that we keep an eye on. So we have all students, as well as English learners. We've also added RFEP. So RFEP is redesignated English proficient students. What we see in secondary is that our students have successfully gone through our program as ELs in elementary and middle school, and then by high school are exiting the program, so they're redesignated, and then might be participating in AP courses. So we've also included that here, as well as our socioeconomically disadvantaged students, our SED group. And so what your chart, kind of a synthesis of the chart, is that currently at Morro Bay High School, 17% of students are in AP courses. And this is a 4% increase from 2010-11. The EL enrollment does remain low, so students who are still English learners in high school are often newcomers to the country or are foreign exchange students. However, the RFEP group, which are the students that are more likely our students that have progressed through our EL program over the years, enrollment for that group is up 8% in the last 5 years. And for our SED group at Morroway High School is also up 6% since 11-12. And so that's what this chart on the top right of your data shows.
We have a question for Ms. Sheffer.
On enrollment.
Yeah, I just wanted to make sure on when I look at these charts, sometimes I think the information can be a little confusing to me, at least. If I want to know if some of these students are designated, are listed twice.
So all of these student groups, with the exception of grade 10, 11, 12, those are separate students. English learners might also be socioeconomically disadvantaged and then are also counted in all. So they're never mutually exclusive.
Okay.
That's correct.
Okay, thank you.
With the exception of RFEP. So if you're an English learner, you're still an English learner. If you're an RFEP, you have exited the English learner program. So those are
but
not.
You could still also be SED?
Yes.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
And if I can, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Buckman.
Thanks.
Eight courses?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that's a good one.
Thank you.
So the next piece for Morro Bay I wanted to share was the percent of enrolled students who are actually taking the exam. So students enroll in AP courses, which are considered college-level courses, and if they take the AP exam and then receive a 3 or higher, they can get credit at their university that they eventually attend. So what we like to look at is the comparison of how many students are in the course and how many students take the test. So for Morro Bay, this has remained very high. So last spring in May is when they take AP exams. 78% of the students in the course took the test for that corresponding course. And then I've also included exam scores 3 or better on the same chart here because they have the potential to have a negative relationship. So the larger percentage of students taking the test, the scores could potentially go down because if somebody didn't feel prepared for the test, they might not take it. But as we see, even though a ballpark average 80% of Morro Bay students over these last 4 years have taken the test, the percent of exam scores has gone up significantly from 67% to 72%. So that's what we would really like to see, more students taking the test, more students passing the test. And so then I'm going to go to Slo High. So any more questions right now about Morro Bay?
Well, this applies to both schools. Could you inform us and the public that when a student passes the AB test, what advantage that gives to them when they enter college?
So if they, they receive a score of 3 or better, it's kind of a, it's more a common practice. It's particular to each university, whether or not they take that for credit in that subject area or elective credit, but usually kind of the broad definition is that if you get a score of 3 or better, and it's out of 5, so you can get a 1, a 2, a 3, or a 4, or a 5. If you get a score of 3 or better, most universities offer some type of credit. So if you took the English language AP test, one university might offer you English, like freshman level English credit for it. Another university might offer you just elective credit for it, but you can still get credit at most universities for AP.
Thank you. Mrs. Sheffer and then Mr. Buckman.
And I would just add from the parent paying for college side of this that it saves, if should the university, the institution accept AP scores as replacing, the eliminating the need to take a particular class, it saves a lot of money. So just and it helps the student progress, especially in California where it's so hard to complete a degree in 4 years. Now it gives a little bit of a leg up with that as well.
Yeah, so the test is about is 85. So I think it's about $86, $85. So to receive credit for a whole course for $85 is pretty good. Okay.
Thank you, sir. So as I was looking at this, and by the way, congratulations on the numbers going up. Mm-hmm. I think that's good. That's comes through loud and clear. I was looking at the 17% of Morro Bay High School students are enrolled in AP classes.
Today.
But then when I went over to San Luis, it says over one-third, so I'm guessing that's about 33%?
Yeah, so we're going to flip this over, and we'll move on
to
Slo High.
The question would be, that's a big difference.
Yes.
Okay, so I don't know whether staff has had a chance to look at that, and you know, something's probably happening already, but it's a big difference. And then just one other quick question. My understanding is, and it may be in the past, but I thought it was, is that the state offers...
there's a reduced fee. Is that what you're talking about?
Reduced fees for students that qualify for the
AP. Students that qualify take the test for $5.
Okay.
And as many tests as they want to take.
And so as you're spouting the number so well, we must take advantage of that and we let them know.
Okay. Yes, I don't know the exact number, but we had quite a few students, and it was quite a jump last year from previous years as well.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
All right. So Slo High currently offers 15 AP courses. Some of the differences from Morro Bay High, they also offer AP Computer Science, Latin, and I'm missing one, Chemistry. And so the numbers on the left-hand chart show you how many students are enrolled in each one of those courses. Percent over the five-year period. And then SED at Slo High is also up 13%. So from 10 or 11, 12 to currently today, there's 22% of SED students at Slo High are currently enrolled in AP courses. And the other number I wanted to point out here that I kind of skimmed over is that 41% of RFEP students, so students who were former English learners, are in AP courses at Slo High. And then if we look at the tests, this has been there's a huge increase from 10-11 to last spring, 13-14. 70% of Slo High students who take the course are now also taking the test. So this is a big growth. And as I said before, when you have a big jump like that, 20% more students are taking the test, there's a potential for the scores to go down. But they actually also went up a little bit, so they're staying really high. Questions on Slo High before I move on? And the other thing, too, here in the bottom right-hand corner, so if the current class of 2015, our current seniors, stay in all the AP courses they're enrolled in as of last week, they'll have finished, 65% of them will have taken at least one AP course. So that leaves us with, at both high schools combined, over half of 12th graders who are currently in our schools will have graduated taking an AP course, and then they have that option of taking the test and maybe getting college credit. And 20% will have enrolled in five or more. So that could get you a whole semester's worth. That's as Ellen was saying before. And in total, so there's about 317 students in the current class of 2015 that have taken AP courses. Between the 317 of them, they will have taken 1,300 AP classes. So that's a pretty good story, I think.
Dr. Eisenbeth Rogers, yeah.
Yes, thank you. Yes, that is very impressive, and thank you for presenting all of that. I just want to comment on your comment about the growth in the number of students at Slo High who have taken the English language learners and the RFEP students, and I just want to remind everyone about what Eldra Avery said at the kickoff at the beginning of this year. And I'm looking at the dates here, and I think they coincide beautifully with what happened. So she talked about in the year 2011, she literally went into the hallways and found students who, as we all know, I'm just repeating this for the public because I wish we could repeat her, broadcast her entire speech, because she brought one of her students that she recruited by going into the hall and saying, "You can do this class." And the student would be, "No, I can't do this class." And she would assure the student they could. She would get buy-in from the rest of the students in the class, and that particular student went on to graduate last year from Channel Islands CSU. And so I just want to point that out, that we have to really actively recruit, and I know that we are doing that, and we're reaping the benefits of that here. And then I just want to ask the question about at Morrilby High School, how we're doing that outreach and how we're trying to engage those students as well.
I think Kim... She left me. Here we go. Kim was going to talk a little bit about that as well, if you want to address it.
Yes, great question. So it is on our radar, and I think we're going to give Dr. Pruitt a couple of days to, get his feet under him, and then look at ways to give access to additional students and to look at ways to actively recruit. Some of the summary, just, it's a lot of things to take in, so I just kind of want to put some things out there that we want you to walk away with. So in summary, we have an increasing enrollment over the years, which really does allow a unique access to a lot of students, and it's what AP testing and an AP exam and just being in that kind of environment is kind of a unique college level environment that we get a rare opportunity to expose students to kind of that level of expectation and that high level of rigor and just that type of situation for a student to be in front of. So we're proud that this is continuing to increase that access, which matches with one of your board goals and priorities. Also, I think to address your question, with STEAM coming to Morrilby High School, that really gives Morrilby High School the opportunity to look at additional AP courses when it comes to those areas of science, especially in technology, to possibly look at other mathematics or other areas within STEAM that they could look at. How could we continue a pathway for students so that they're prepared for that level of coursework?
Take AP courses or not. And I know that the CBEDS does collect that information. Do they still do that?
Yeah, so that's included in SED. So socioeconomically disadvantaged students includes both free and reduced lunch, and then students whose parents did not complete high school. So that's by education level as well.
Thank you. Dr. Prater, your light is on.
On this, I think, thank you for the presentation, by the way. It was a really good opportunity for us to look over a five-year period and see what has taken place. And so when you look at San Luis Obispo High, it certainly stands out as making noted progress in these areas. And I think what you'll find is that Leslie O'Connor has made it a priority to not only reach out to across the spectrum of students, but with his staff and his parent groups. And he's made AP courses, more rigorous courses, a priority at San Luis Obispo High School, and it reflects that in the data. It's not an easy road because it's a very difficult task and a challenge for students and staff, especially with our RFET population. So there's a lot of conversation now at the middle school level about making sure that we take notice of students, our EL students, who are ready to be reclassified. And I think we've sort of taken our eyes off that ball in the past, and I think it's time to put it back on. So both of our middle school principals are taking, and their staffs are taking a closer look at the middle level, at increasing the level of engagement and rigor in our classes, and encouraging our English learners and our SED population of students to have that access. So that's part of the board goals. Dr. Pruitt, now at Morro Bay High School, is working with his staff to then start as Mrs. McGrath mentioned, looking at those STEAM options, opportunities for really interesting, engaging, and rigorous courses. He is doing that. So in the next year, 2 years, you're going to see course offerings that you'll need to approve that reflect that effort. So his focus is going to shift on that at Morro Bay High, which will need to become a priority if STEAM is going to be a success. So there's a lot of moving parts. There's a lot of discussion yet to be had. But I do want you to know that this is a focus for us. We think it's very important that at both comprehensive high schools, we offer rigorous academic courses and provide access to those, even if we need to reach out in the hallway and pull them in. And that's what we're going to be doing at both of our high schools. And I'm really proud of those efforts. I think Dr. Pruitt is ripe for the challenge, and he's well on his way. So we'll keep you posted as we go.
Thank you, Dr. Prater. Are there any questions from the board? Is there any public comment or questions? Okay, thank you very much. We are now on the action consent agenda. So as I read these items, if you wish one pulled, let me know. Okay, so 11.01, approval of certificated and classified personnel items. 11.02, approval of the 2013-14 reopener agreement with SEIU employees. 11.03, the approval of agreement with confidential employees. 11.04, acceptance of donations. 11.05, approval of furniture and equipment requests. 11.06, approval of purchase orders.
Mr. President?
Yes, Mr. Millar.
Mr. President?
Yes, Mr. Millar.
I've been outsmarted by my mute button here, but I'd like to pull 11.02 if you don't mind.
Okay, that would be the approval of the 2013-14 reopen agreement with SEIU. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay. Can Mr. Millar,
I move approval of 11.01 and 11.03 through 11.06.
Okay. And we have a second from Mrs. Roger. So we have a motion on the floor for the 11.01. 03, 04, 05, 06. Is there any question or discussions? All in favor?
Aye.
Motion passes 6-0. Mr. Millar, 11.02.
The reason I wanted to pull it is I just wanted to make sure that in the paragraph 6.1.2, Article 6, Hours of Employment, I hope I know the answer to this question, but the language in the first that paragraph that refers to there will be no changes in hours that are punitive, it's because I switched. 11.02.
So we have a motion from Mr. Millar for approval and a second by Mr. Buckman. Is there any further discussion? All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries 6-0. Thank you very much, Mrs. Newland. We are now on the advanced agenda. Anything for the advanced agenda tonight? Okay. And now we are to board reports. Mr. Buckman.
I had the pleasure, actually, last night of attending the countywide PTA board meeting, and there was a presentation on truancy and SARB and all those great topics. And during the meeting, I have a thing on my computer that whenever the San Luis Obispo comes in, it pops up. And during the presentation, this is what popped up. San Luis Obispo County makes the top 5 student truancy list. So that's not a good thing. That means we're among the 5 worst counties with truancy problems.
May I interject? It was the county, though.
I'm sorry. Exactly. It's the county.
County, thank you.
And I just want to say I've been really excited about a very big new emphasis in our district over the last few years, working on truancy. I'm going to mention Chris Dowler's name. I think he's worked very hard on it. In many districts in our county, we happen to be a community-funded district, which means we don't get our money based on how many kids derrieres are sitting in a seat, and other districts do. So for us to be improving in our truancy means what we care about is what those kids are learning in school. And so it was just amazing that this popped up while we're doing that. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Buckman. Dr. Eisdrath Rogers.
I would just like to say that I had the opportunity to attend the Slo High School Athletic Booster Bash on Saturday night, and that is a growing event every year. It's been going on for 4 years now, and it raises tens of thousands of dollars to help out with transportation and equipment and the student teams at Slo High School. And I just want to congratulate Jeff Brandel for that tremendous effort. And Mr. Thompson, I believe, is the Mr. Thompson is definitely the parent leader of that organization. And of course, Leslie O'Connor was behind that from the get-go. So that has grown into quite an affair, a not-to-miss affair. And then Saturday morning, I was also able to go on a tour of Slo High. And I just wanted to mention that those tours are available, and Mr. O'Connor has made himself available at any time, any day, that anyone wants to come by the high school and ask for a tour of the facilities. Quite enjoyable.
Thank you, Dr. Eisendrath Rogers. Mrs. Sheffer.
I would just point out that tours are also occurring at Morro Bay High School. So anyone with an interest in those should contact the school, get the dates and times, and the school leaders will also make themselves available for tours at the public's convenience if the dates and times we've set up are not convenient.
And I just want to thank Mrs. Jennifer Donnelly and Scott McLongstreet for their assistance with the Rotary Club, and also the Baywood PTA for their assistance in helping us present and celebrate a Grandparents' Day. And I think we were very successful, and there will be some money in it for the Baywood Elementary PTA to spend however they like. Mr. Buckman.
If I can just add one thing. I also drove out to Monarch Grove Elementary School to look at the situation out there. I had a totally, I said, oh, there's a crossing guard up here. But I know staff's working on it, and it was good to go see how bad it is. That sounds bad.
Yeah, we don't want it memorialized by Jan and Dean, but it is a pretty dangerous situation at that curve. Anything else for the?
Can I give you one thing really quick? I want
sure.
to thank Mr. Schwimmer here in the audience. He actually has helped the Del Mar PTA. If you saw the beautiful new multi-purpose room sign and set up in the front, it looks fantastic. So we love that, and I would love for the board to come over one day and watch watch Liam, who came up to talk to you on that playground sometime.
Oh, absolutely!
It is it's awesome to see the kids out there and a lot of fun. So we definitely need to have the board out to